Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. This is the Alternative Media. I'm your host, Patrick Slattery. And today we have with us, live from Tokyo, I say live, actually we're recording this a couple of hours before our broadcast, but right now it's live for me, live from Tokyo, Benjamin Fulford, the world-renowned financial and political reporter, investigative journalist. Benjamin, thank you for coming back on the show.
Yes, well, it's nice to be on, and thank you for calling me a journalist and not a conspiracy theorist, which is this is a label created by the CIA in 1967 to try to denigrate anybody who looks into truths that aren't supposed to be known by the public at large. So I am a journalist. I deal with facts and evidence. I don't speculate. I don't make fiction, and I don't talk about stuff I don't know about.
Well, you were certainly a journalist for 20 years before you got deeply into the dark side, if we want to call it that. You had a career at a variety of prestigious outlets. Forbes, yeah, you were the bureau chief, Pacific bureau chief. Thompson, South China Morning Post, Nikkei.
People on the Financial Times. The point about all these things is that when you work for a company like that, whatever you write affects stock prices. So you're going to be sued if you do anything wrong. So you have to be very careful with facts. And that's the training I've had. I don't like to do anything that I can't prove in a court or say anything that I cannot prove in a court when it comes to that. So people, please be aware of that. I try to, speak the truth as best as I can and with as much evidence as I can provide. Now, I guess you wanted to talk about the G7.
I wanted to start off asking you about the G7, which was held in Tokyo, and President Obama was there, and I wanted to ask you about the Japanese perception of the G7, his little voyage down to Hiroshima and the speech he made there, and also his statements saying that the rest of the world is very rattled by Donald Trump. So maybe you can just run with that.
Okay, well, I guess I looked at it as a gathering of Rothschild servants, okay? The G7 countries, the prime ministers, they are all essentially employees of the Rothschild family and their related sort of family nexus group based in the city of London and in Switzerland, among other places. And I guess in the case of Obama, he kind of represents two different masters. Okay, the old Rothschild network is still, pushing him to say certain things and do certain things. But then the military-industrial complex, the White Hats and the agencies and the Pentagon are pushing Obama in a different direction. So he serves two masters. That's my, understanding of the situation. Now, as far as Hiroshima is concerned, I think the Japanese are glad just that he went there as a sitting president. And they did not necessarily expect an apology. Now, however, I would say this, that this is something that Americans are not aware of. But first of all, the American government knew full well that a Japanese fleet was headed towards Pearl Harbor. They were warned by the Australians, they had their own intelligence, and instead of stopping the fleet, they actually removed the aircraft carriers and let the attack go ahead, because American public opinion was 80% against the U.S. getting involved in World War II. Mm-hmm. So it was not a sneak attack as it was portrayed. That's the first thing people need to understand about the history. The other thing is that Japan had already agreed to surrender before Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So in other words, they didn't have to. The story is that we needed to bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki because otherwise a million people would die on the land invasion of Japan, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that wasn't true because Japan had already said we want to surrender, but the American people under Truman wanted to display their new weapon to the world and show how mean they, how fierce they were.
And so, I want to ask you something. I have a Japanese professor who's told me that Truman's diary indicated exactly what you're saying. That it was the, and so you're familiar with that, and you can verify that.
That's the first I've heard, but I've heard it from so many sources. There's so much evidence. There's no denying it. However, I'm not going to say the Japanese were angels. One thing that seems to be whitewashed from history is their massive use of poisonous gas in World War II in China. We all know about their disease warfare with Unit 731, but I visited an island that was their poison gas manufacturing center once, and they killed hundreds of thousands of people or more, possibly millions, with poison gas. So we weren't talking about nice guys in Japan. So, you know, I don't think Obama necessarily has to apologize for nuclear weapons, and I think he was right to say that, you know, massive killing of civilians by anybody is something we should never again as a species do. So I think we should leave it at that. We're certainly not going to let ourselves... Sorry, that's my recording software telling me that I have no video input. I don't know how to turn that off.
That didn't bother us. I do hear a little bit of...
Okay, anyway.
Static, though.
What the military people need to understand, and they do in Russia and China and the U.S., is that we're not going to let these people trick us into World War III. It's just not going to happen. They're not going to get out of the trouble they're in. And when I say they, I'm talking about the families that own the central banks, that own the process of creating yen, dollars, and euros, and other minor currencies. We're not going to let them get out of their current situation by starting a war. Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen. Okay, everybody is agreed on that. The only people doing any serious fighting now are mercenary armies paid by oil companies in the Middle East. And we're going to have to do something about that. And that's going to involve dealing with the people at the very top, not with mercenary armies in the field. It's going to involve talking to Jacob Nathaniel Rothschild in Switzerland and to the Rockefeller families and all the other sort of the Bush families. The Bushes are now kind of cornered and they've lost a lot of power, but that whole Bush-Clinton mafia is still circling the wagons around Hillary Clinton, and they're still a dangerous force.
It was funny here over the past few months to just see how ridiculous Jeb Bush, who was supposed to be the representative of the Bush dynasty, just how voters wanted nothing of what he had to sell. He was made to look ridiculous, and in particular made to look ridiculous by Donald Trump. And that gets me to my next question. So Obama has gone on American, before the American press, and said that, you know, world leaders, people around the world, are really rattled by the prospect of the Donald Trump election. In Japan, in the popular media or among, you know, elites that you have access to, what is the impression of Donald Trump?
It's evolving, but they're concerned because the people here work for the government currently in power. Was put in there through fraudulent elections that were arranged by the by Musashi Engineering, which is controlled by the Council on Foreign Relations, which is controlled by Rockefeller.
So, Musashi Engineering, are they involved in voting machines?
They have the machines that counted more than 80% of votes, and there was plenty of evidence, in particular put together by the Japan Independence Party, headed by a man called Richard Koshimizu. But there's lots of evidence, including statistical evidence, other evidence,
Richard,
exit polls.
Richard
Koshimizu.
Koshimizu, and so Richard isn't his his regular Japanese.
No, but that's the name he uses. In any case, he's a Japanese citizen, Japanese speaking. He does have good English, but he's a Japanese native. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the point is that this government in power now was put in by the Rothschilds and their puppets. And they're worried because Trump represents a push against that control. And that has them worried. And the other thing that has the Japanese establishment worried is that he's saying that the Japanese should pay for the full cost of all U.S. military forces in Japan. Now, this is very interesting because the U.S. military, I talked to them, and they say that strategically they don't really need to be in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, they're strategically speaking, they want to have new bases in the northernmost islands of the Indonesian archipelago, which would be right in the middle of the Malacca Straits, where they could control or make sure that the flow of trade between east and west proceeds smoothly. Okay. Whereas having their bases in Okinawa just strategically doesn't make sense. It's too close to China. It's just too vulnerable. It's just not. So the people who want the American military to stay are the puppet rulers who've been installed since World War II.
Okay.
And most of them are Korean, not Japanese.
I want to ask some questions about that, if you don't mind. So I know that in the Japanese budget that they have a big budget item for supporting the American bases. Do you know how far that goes? Because they do pay a lot towards the upkeep of the American bases. Do you know?
Well, they do. I don't know I'll be honest, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I don't think it's the full cost.
Mm-hmm.
And what Japan is really paying for through the nose is supporting the Rothschild central banking nexus. Under Abe, the last real sources of money in Japan are being looted. So, for example, you know the story that when we studied economics, they told us that you deposit your savings in the bank, and then the bank then lends that money and gets interest, and you get some of that interest, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not true, as you know. They just create money out of nothing and lend it at interest.
Well, yeah, they take deposits, and lend out a lot more than the deposits they take in a factor of several times.
More. You know, now 100 times more ever since Clinton messed with the banking laws. But in any case, the point is that Japan had a postal savings bank and an agricultural savings bank that actually functioned in that manner.
They were under state control.
They were under state control, and they lended exactly what they had as deposits. So they were 100% pure. Now, they've taken that money, and they've put it into their huge gambling machine worldwide. They've also looted the Japanese pension fund, and it's all going into the stock market. That's how they're looting they're laundering their money.
Into the Japanese stock market?
Not just the Japanese, but the European and U.S. stock markets. And you can see that the stock markets have decoupled from their traditional measures of value. It used to be like price per earnings and all that kind of stuff. Well, that's all out the door, and it's all... What's happening is the central banks are basically consolidating corporate ownership, centralized corporate ownership. They're using Federal Reserve, Bank of Japan, European bank money to buy shares and bonds, and that's all putting it in their control. So the ownership of all the listed companies is being centralized by the families that own the central banks, and they're propping up the stock market to create the illusion that everything is all right, when, as we know, the real economy is in serious trouble in mm-hmm. Europe and the U.S.
Okay, I have another question.
Mm-hmm.
20, 30 years ago, when we were covering financial markets in Japan, there was this phenomenon of cross-shareholdings where companies from related groups, various Mitsubishi companies, would own most of the shares in each other. And there would be some of their shares that would be traded on markets, but not so much that you could have a hostile takeover. Now,
what happened was that during the prime ministership of Junichiro Koizumi and under the economic control of Heizo Takenaka,
in the early part of the last
the shares
decade.
In Japanese listed corporations owned by banks were handed over to hedge funds that were controlled by this criminal family nexus. Which I call the Khazarian Mafia,
mm-hmm.
they've been called many other things.
I call them Jews. It's a very short and easy to pronounce.
Yeah, the problem with that is that it's like calling it Mafia, Italian. Okay? It doesn't,
Okay, well, I was just having some fun there.
Yeah, I know.
But I want to get on with your analysis.
Yeah, I know, but that's why I don't use the word Jew, just because I don't want to, mix all the honest and hardworking and morally upright Jewish people with the Jewish gangsters who rule them, you know. But yeah, I mean, they're gang at the top. They're gangsters, and they're a very nasty group of gangsters at that. And they're clinging to power. I was supposed to. They were supposed to negotiate with us, but they've run away. So we're going to have to go after them now. This is going to be a rather unpleasant business. But they are not handing over control to the people of the planet in a nice manner. So we're going to have to start playing hardball with them.
So the major companies, which used to be protected, insulated from, say, outside domination, mafia, Khazarian mafia domination through cross-shareholdings, those cross-shareholding ratios unwound, and many of them are coming under this control? Is that what you're saying?
If you look at the stock market ownership, you'll find that all the listed companies are at least 33.4% owned by foreign funds. Now, if you look at it, it'll be things like State Street and Banking, mm-hmm. Vanguard, mm-hmm. I think Blackstone or something.
BlackRock.
BlackRock. These are the, and if you look at behind these funds, you'll find it's the usual suspects. It goes to the Rothschilds and that whole crime family network of Khazarian mafioso. Now, what Hazel Takanaka told me, and this is, at the time I couldn't believe it, was that Japan had been threatened with earthquake weapons, and that's why he handed over control. And
was that during that very controversial interview you had with him that was videoed?
Well, the interview I had with him, at the time I was just catching up with all this stuff, but I said, why did you hand over control of all the Japanese shares to the Rockefellers? That was a big question that got him sort of jumping around, and that's why he sent this man, this self-described ninja, to offer to me, you know, both a threat and a bribe. He said, either we'll kill you or we'll make you finance minister, but you got to go along with our plan to reduce the world population by 90% if you want to be finance minister. So that, I have a tape recording of that conversation. I've given it to authorities. I still have it.
And it was videoed, right? I mean,
the video, what I had a video of the interview. I have a video of the interview with Takanaka.
Yes.
But I have a recording.
You showed that to me.
Of the ninja threatening me and offering me to be Minister of Finance.
All right. Did that videoed recording with Takenaka, is that on the internet where people could see it? I know it's in Japanese, but...
No, it's not. I think he threatened to sue me, and I didn't, at the time, I wasn't, you know, ready to pay huge lawyer fees and stuff, so...
Well, I've seen it.
I should put it up. I'll find it and I'll put it up.
Yeah.
You know, at the time, I was still just beginning to learn this stuff, you know. It's a rabbit hole that runs quite deep in some ways, but it's quite shallow in others. It always ends up, no matter, you go through all these smoke and mirrors, UFO talk,
And we're starting to come up on the break. So I'm going to ask you about that as soon as we come back from the break. And we are back.
All right. I don't remember how to write the break. So, what happened was that what you see is they try to misdirect you. They try to create some kind of cloud of confusion to prevent you from seeing the true essence of who controls this planet. And they try to say it's reptilians or aliens or you know, God knows what. But we have to deal with what we see and what the forensic trail leads to. And like I said, it goes to these family groups. Now, the only thing I can say, though, that gets into that weird X-Files stuff is that they, Dr. Michael Marin, who is also known to me as Dr. Vandermeer, but he's actually a cousin of Queen Elizabeth, he said. Anyway, he represents the family, as he called it, the Sachs, Gotha, Rothschild family group that controls the Western financial system. And he said that above them was the Italian P2 Freemason Lodge, and that they worship the sun. And so I went to Italy, and I met these people, and they said that they worship something called the Black Sun that lives in the gamma rays, and controls them and gives them orders. So there is that weird dimension to it.
Well, that's certainly very weird. But yeah, there's a lot of weirdness in the world.
But that's what the forensic trail led me to. And when I went to Italy, they tried to kill me, and they failed, fortunately for me. That sort of, you know, seems to be, they do seem to be under some sort of mind control. Now, if you want to be very sort of scientific and logical about it, you can say that there is some kind of cultural evolution that's created a group mind that is multi-generational, and people born into that group mind are educated in a certain way and go along with an agenda that transcends an individual. Mm-hmm. So you can call it a kind of artificial intelligence, that an intergenerational artificial intelligence that is based on human minds and yet controls them too.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're dealing with. So we have a family group mind that's been in power for a very long time, and they know they control the levers of power, which are money, military force, and information.
Okay.
That's what we're dealing with.
Excuse me. Yeah. And I want to ask again now, just regarding the Japanese impressions of Trump. Donald Trump has said in an interview in the United States that it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if Japan acquired nuclear weapons. Now, of course, Japan has the second largest nuclear power industry in the world after France's.
It's massive.
And they've got all the technology, and they've got the the rocket technology and everything. So the idea, I mean, how far away would they be from nuclear weapons anyway? I mean, are we talking about weeks or maybe a couple of months?
Boris Yeltsin once revealed that the Japanese tell only very high-level government officials that they actually have a bunch of ballistic nuclear missiles already.
Mm-hmm.
Now, officially, they say it would only take a month to do it. But in fact, they already have nuclear weapons, and they have had them for a long time. Now, you know, you can...
So whether they're a month away or whether they already have some, that's not much of a difference. You might as well think of Japan as already being a nuclear power.
Yes.
An undeclared one.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine as far as I'm concerned, because I don't think they're going to use them, but it'll keep them from becoming a Chinese colony. So fine.
And so why would people like Abe... want to have American troops in Japan if they've already got their own deterrent?
Because the American troops protect them from the Japanese people, that's why.
Okay.
We have an occupation government of traitors and quislings who've been taking orders from the Americans and using American troops and Korean gangsters as their enforcers to keep themselves in power.
And is it a coincidence that Prime Minister Abe is the grandson of Prime Minister Kishi, who rammed through over all sorts of opposition the current U.S.-Japan security treaty that allows for these bases?
Well, I've heard something interesting about Kishi. General MacArthur called in several war criminals were executed, right?
Right.
And what happened was General MacArthur called each of them up and said, "You can either obey me and control your people through me, or you can accept execution."
Okay, and I'm going to want to hear more of that after our break. And we are back, and Benjamin, you were talking about General MacArthur's ultimatum to the Japanese.
And so the ones who were executed all say, "I will not do that. I will not betray my people," and so they're executed. And then Kishi thought it was his turn to be executed, and MacArthur gave him the same deal and said, "Okay, I'll take it." And so Kishi became prime minister and became a sort of substitute, a surrogate for the Americans, and then that set the system in. So you have a prime minister who basically agrees to obey the Americans while appearing to be an independent ruler. Okay.
So Kishi had been part of the Japanese cabinet, I believe the Minister of Munitions during World War II.
And then
he was put in prison, and he was a Class A war criminal, but he winds up not getting executed, and then by 1957 winds up becoming prime minister.
That's right.
And he's the grandfather of our Japanese current prime minister Abe.
Yes, and Abe, of course, is a total quisling, stooge, traitor, whatever you call him. He's not an independent actor. When he got elected, he was in the room with Gerald Curtis, the head of CIA for Japan.
Who isn't he a professor at
he's no longer head of CIA Japan, but at the time he was. And then the head of Mossad Japan. Yeah, it was Michael Green was the head of Mossad Japan.
Michael Green.
Yeah. And he was working under the CSIS, Center for Strategic International Studies, headed by Richard Armitage, who was a heroin dealer and a murderer.
And the former, what was he, the Assistant Secretary of Defense?
Yeah. Was, so, or so there state. You have it. You have a heroin dealer and a murderer giving orders to gangsters who murder and intimidate Japanese politicians.
And was Armitage the ambassador to Japan at one point?
I don't think so. I'm not sure, but he's considered here as the kind of the head U.S. guy. Or he was.
I think he was number two at the State Department under Colin Powell.
Yeah, he's had to, but in any case, the point is, it tells you a lot that you have a heroin dealer and a murderer who ran a whorehouse in Da Nang, Vietnam.
And yeah, he speaks fluent Vietnamese, apparently, Richard Armitage. So he has these deep Vietnamese connections.
Yeah, and he basically betrayed the U.S. in Vietnam and did all sorts of other nasty work. And so this is the sort of person they had running Japan. And the Japanese gangsters, reported to him and carried out murders and other sort of nasty work on his behalf to keep their secret control going. This is what I've run into, forensically, having been a journalist based here for 30 years. I actually deal with the people who run this place. I meet them, I talk to them, I talk to the heads of the gangs. I know what the situation is. Mm-hmm. And right now, we have a government that's under Abe that takes orders from the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers. But they're running scared because they know, for example, the current emperor is not the son of the Emperor Hirohito. He's put in there as a substitute because the real emperor, Hirohito, did not want his son to fall into the hands of the Americans. So the whole thing is just based on lies and deception, and that is being taken apart right now.
Okay, I have more questions.
Sure.
So right now, the United States has really been amassing military assets on Russia's western border. They've got
not really. I mean, well, I know what you're talking about. They have token presence there. Now, let me tell you.
Let me just at least finish the question. Okay, that's sure. I mean, that's kind of the preface of the question. You can disagree with the preface if you'd like.
All right, go on.
From the Japanese perspective, is the Japanese government, are they involved in negotiations with Russia over the disputed islands or fishing rights? Isn't there something going on between Russia and Japan right now?
Yes and no. I mean, the Russians are saying that as long as Japan has a quisling government, they can't reach a deal. And so right now, Abe is under orders from his Rothschild masters not to be friendly with Russia. And for that reason, he cannot negotiate a peace agreement, and the Russians don't see him as a serious player. Having said that, he's met Putin an awful lot of times, Abe has, and there is a group in Japan that realizes that they need to make a deal with the Russians if they don't want to become a Chinese colony, because the Americans aren't going to be enough to defend them, because the Americans right now depend on Chinese money to finance their military, so the Japanese cannot seriously expect the Americans to defend them from China at this point in time. Not as long as their military is basically financed by China. But, it's still a situation where, on the surface, we still have these Rothschild slaves running the place.
Okay.
And that's the situation that we're going to have to deal with if we want to liberate this planet.
Now, what is the public perception in Japan? I say the public, but also you know, the non-governmental elites that you have access to. What is their perception of Putin and Russia?
They like him. They're big fans of Putin here.
Mm-hmm. How about the mass media? How about in the pop media?
Well, the corporate media has to go along with the Rothschild line of Putin is bad guy, dictator, you know, invaded Crimea, all that kind of stuff. But the magazines and the books and other things say a different story. You know, their control of information here is not absolute. They never got control of the book publishing, for example, which is why there's information available in Japan that's not available anywhere else.
Which is why you're a best-selling author.
Yeah, and why my books are forbidden in English.
Forbidden in English, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that they banned books in this day and age? And it's not because I preach hate or racism or anything like that, or I write, you know, slanders, because I'm telling the truth that they don't want people in the West to know. Now, speaking about truth that they don't want the West to know, I'd like to talk about Donald Trump.
Please do.
Now, he has negotiated Chapter 11 restructurings for his companies, mm-hmm. and he did a good job, I think. So he's basically have to negotiate the U.S. bankruptcy now. And,
you know, I've never heard anybody say it like that, but, yeah, that would actually be kind of a job qualification that he's got.
Yes.
People are always on his case that he's had to go through those, bankruptcy proceedings. And well, that's actually a very relevant experience.
Yeah. Well, he knows how to make bankers take a haircut. now in this case, you know, the United States has already forced the Saudis and the Japanese to write off their holdings of U.S. debt. Okay, the Japanese and the Saudis and the other oil countries, they know that they're not going to get back all the money they lent to the United States for the past 60 years, especially the last 30 years. But the problem is the Chinese. The Chinese are much more hard-headed, and they cannot be militarily forced into submission. So that's who he's going to negotiate with at the end of the day. The Chinese are saying quite nicely that they want to restructure the world architecture in a better manner.
Financial architecture or political architecture?
Well, I'm going to get into that. First of all, it's the United Nations. Like four out of the five permanent members of the Security Council are European. You know, they have the British, the French, the Russians, the Americans, and then the Chinese.
Right? Although the Americans, British, and French are increasingly non-European. That's, you know, within a matter of a couple of decades.
Well, when I say European, let's say
Western. Okay.
And that does not, you know, reflect either the demographic or economic reality of the planet right now. It may have been made sense at the end of World War II, but not now. So they want that changed. And then these international institutions like the BIS, the World Bank, the International Court of Justice at The Hague, and the IMF, they want, and of course the central banks, the Fed, the European Central Bank, the Bank of Japan, they want the way these organizations are run to be fundamentally revamped. Now, the particular scheme. But, you know, this can be done in such a way that everybody, for example, working at the World Bank will find a bigger budget and a higher salary under the new system. It's not like they're going to be out in the street, as long as they weren't working in a criminal capacity. Now, the IMF has already sort of seen the writing on the wall. They issued a report, I got to give them credit for that, saying that IMF caused a lot of misery. I mean, the IMF would, for years, has gone to countries and said, all right, you got to sell all your ports and real estate and hand over control of your economy to these bankers, and you got to stop paying welfare, and you've got to stop, you know, giving money to poor people, and you got to hand it all over to bankers. And now they're finally admitting that all their so-called austerity done over the years has caused misery, and it hasn't helped economic recovery. They've been basically, you know, looters in suits for the bankers, and they're waking up to the fact that what they were doing was not good for the economies that they were supposedly, they thought they were trying to help. A lot of these people really thought they were doing good by, you know, forcing these countries to undergo their programs. But now the IMF has said, all right, basically, we were bad and we're sorry. And okay, well, they still have a lot of expertise and they have a lot of talented staff who can be put to good work in a new system under better management. But now the World Bank has also done good. The problem with the World Bank is that, okay, never mind minor issues of corruption and stuff, and there are minor as a whole for that institution. They could have lent 1,000 times more per year than they did. You know, they're a tiny, tiny drop in the bucket. And so under the new system, we could have 1,000 times more money spent on developing the planet than is being spent right now. And that's where the thing I was pushing for, and which the Rothschilds are resisting, and so we're going to have to, you know, use force, unfortunately, is setting up a future planning agency. That would be run totally transparently under the watch of all the people of the planet Earth to plan our future, basically. And then to realistically carry out. It's not going to be a central planning Stalinist type thing at all. It's going to be an idea factory. The actual work will be done by the private mm-hmm. sector, by companies that actually are in business and know how to do this stuff. It's mm-hmm. not going to be like the Soviet Union, where you have central planners mm-hmm. deciding how many toothbrushes and how much toothpaste is going to be made. You know, mm-hmm. that's not going to work.
Okay. I have a couple more questions about Japanese public perceptions. Yeah. So one is, it has seemed in past years, and Prime Minister Abe, even before he was Prime Minister or during the in-between time, he was well known as kind of a China hawk. How deep is the level of hostility towards China among the Japanese public?
Well, it's a mixed story, but, you know, there's been a very heavy, intensive propaganda campaign. So on the one level, there's a kind of feeling of China as the Soviet Union of the old, as the big rival that we have to be careful of. On the other hand, you know, Japan is full of Chinese tourists. And the Japanese companies do far more business with China than mm-hmm. with the U.S., mm-hmm. right? So yeah. It's a mixed bag. On the one hand, they're enjoying the tourist money, and they do big business with them. On the other hand, you know, they find the Chinese to be a bit uncouth, and they don't want to become ruled by the Chinese. So that's, I think,
And, you know, if you're in Tokyo, certain neighborhoods of Tokyo, you go into a convenience store, and you're likely to find a Chinese clerk. But
yeah, that's an interesting thing, you know, that people haven't heard this, but Japan is actually letting in immigrants, and so they're not saying so, they're not announcing it, but in fact, a lot of the jobs now that are done that they can't find Japanese to do for are being done by Chinese or other Southeast Asians. And the thing is that at one point the Chinese said, either you start letting in immigrants or we're going to send 100 million boat people your way. So they say, okay, no. So they send them to these business schools where they learn, you know, word processing and Excel and stuff like that and Japanese. And then they set them out to fill up the holes in the workforce. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea, you know, what the immigration rates are or what the population is? I mean, it's would still probably be not much more than 1% of the population.
Something like that. It's not very high, but it's growing fast.
Mm-hmm. And how do people feel about that?
Well,
because I mean, I remember, say, 30 years ago, it was very a lot of landlords didn't want to lend rent to foreigners. You know, it'd be no dogs, no prostitutes, no foreigners, right? And then, of course, Chinese would be even that much more, less welcome.
Because of the shrinking population, you have, like, was it 3 million empty houses in Japan?
You got a bunch of empty houses.
So, yeah, they have places they cannot land unless they land to the Chinese. And the other thing is, I don't see on the ground level any friction. Like, you have a person working in a convenience store speaking with a Chinese accent. I don't see anybody uncomfortable with that. I haven't seen any incidents on the street level of sort of you know, racial fighting or insulting.
Well, one thing you can say for the Chinese in Japan is at least they come into the country and they're literate in the language, which hardly anybody else would be.
And of course, the Chinese themselves select to come to Japan, and they like Japan, they want to be in Japan, and they find it a really nice place to live, so they become big fans of Japan when they come here. And I once went to China and asked people on the street there what they thought of Japan, and the most common comment, I found it very interesting, is that the Japanese have forgotten that they're Asians.
And the Japanese will refer to Aji-Aji, and they'll refer to Asians, as if they're not Asian themselves.
Yeah, but
which I guess the Brits do with the Europeans, the Continentals.
Yeah, but that is changing. I mean, the popular entertainment now is more shifting to Asian things and less to American Hollywood type stuff. So there's a shift going on, and that's inevitable. But in any case, I want to get, you know, I know this is something that about Donald Trump and what he's got to negotiate, but if he just bankrupts as is, they're going to have to withdraw U.S. forces from around the world.
We're up on another break, but I want you to expound on that in our last segment.
Okay.
So we'll be back after the break. And we are back for our last segment. So, Benjamin, you were talking about Donald Trump.
Yeah, okay. So the problem with, you know, withdrawing the U.S. military from around the world is that the vacuum is going to be filled by, as things stand, by mercenary companies hired by multinational corporations. And we don't want that, because these people aren't there to do good. They're there to extract money. And so you would have a fundamentally exploitative thing replace the vacuum. And so we need to get the Asians, and they've agreed basically to keep funding the international operations of the U.S. military as a sort of a beginning of a world sort of protection force, a planetary protection force.
But, you know, how about just, I have one more question about the Japanese perceptions. You know, you just had last month a big rape case, I guess it was a rape murder case in Okinawa, and they've been over and over and over. It was a somebody affiliated with the U.S. military, and you've had a whole bunch of that over the years.
Well, look, here's the thing. You have a large amount of young men between 18 and 22, which is the military.
Right.
All stationed on this one island where there's not a sufficient population of females.
That's right.
And so it's a recipe for trouble.
It sure is.
And considering the amount of young men there, it's actually quite a low crime rate. But nonetheless, it's intolerable. I mean, the Okinawans basically don't want the American military there, except for the ones who are working for the military, but their budget is coming from Japan. It's not coming from the U.S. military. So a new regime could continue to finance and subsidize Okinawa without having the huge U.S. military presence. And as I repeat, it's the Japanese who want the military there to keep them in power. The Japanese quislings, or the puppet government, needs the U.S. military and the CIA hit squad sort of system they set up here to keep themselves in power. So it's them, it's the quislings here who want the U.S. military. It's not the U.S. military who wants to stay in Japan. Mm-hmm. They're happy to have Japan as an ally, an independent ally, working with them internationally, but they don't need to continue occupying Japan. Okay. Although they, you know,
and now, personally, I for a long time have wanted the American to withdraw from Japan, I think it would be in both Japan's interest or in America's interest. Donald Trump has kind of insinuated that that would be a possibility. What do you think of that?
Well, militarily, the Japanese do not need the Americans to protect them from invasion from China. Now, I've talked to Japanese generals, and they make it quite clear that militarily they're under no threat because they have an ocean to protect them, and they have a powerful navy. And furthermore, the Chinese have no incentive to invade Japan. There's nothing they're going to get from invading that they cannot get through normal trade and tourism. So they have no motive.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no need to have these U.S. troops except to keep the current slave regime in power. That's what I, you know, keep repeating.
Okay.
But again, I want to talk about the international situation, which is that...
Okay, you have about 1 minute. We have about 1 minute.
All right. We need to fundamentally change how we run this planet in order to stop mass extinction and destruction of the environment, poverty, and, you know, we're running this planet incompetently. The people under the current regime have made a mess. We need to completely revamp the international architecture in such a way that We work for the benefit of the planet. We don't exploit the planet as we do now. We're here to save the planet, to build the planet, to create a wonderful future, not to exploit and rape and take away from the planet. That's what we're aiming for. That's the final compliment. We're trying to do this in an open, democratic, transparent way. We need to get the ball rolling.
Amen. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, and thank you for all the great work that you do.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, we will be back after the top of the hour.
うわめく影に盗んで見ている青いあなたの視線が眩しいわ思わせる